Hello, everybody. Bill Buckmaster, along with my buddy John Couch. John engineering and producing our program on the other side of the glass. And together, we welcome you to the Buckmaster Show on this Tuesday, the 22nd of September, 2020. Just a few hours ago, we officially are now in autumn. You wouldn't know it with our endless summer. And then the news today, I thought those excessive heat warnings were behind us. They're talking 104, 105 early next week and issuing an excessive heat warning, which would be the latest ever into a year issued by the National Weather Service. So, boy, just when you thought maybe we'd turn the corner on 100 degrees, not yet. The Buckmaster Show in the Green Things Zocalo Village Studios on 1030 Tucson's Voice for Trusted News Talk. The Buckmaster Show Live Line is presented by Rincon Ventures, Real Estate and Property Management. And speaking of the Live Line, let's go now to Phoenix and David Lujan, the director of the Arizona Center for Economic Progress. David helped write the measure that is on the November ballot that is known as Proposition 208, which would hike income taxes on Arizona's most wealthy to put more money into public education. David, how are you?
Good. How are you, Bill?
Doing well. Thanks for asking. When we hear this, it would tax the most wealthy. What are we talking about here?
It would tax the wealthiest 1% of Arizona taxpayers. So if married couples who file their taxes as married couples, it would be a 3.5% surcharge only on the taxable income they earn above $500,000 a year, or for single filers, only on the taxable income they earn above $250,000 a year. And it would raise an estimated $940 million each year for new annual revenue that would go into our public schools, money that the legislature cannot touch, would have strict accountability, that can only be used for very specific things like increasing teacher salaries and reducing class sizes.
Would it go to administrators?
Not at all. It specifically states that no money would go to administration in the schools. And so we feel very good that, you know, this has very strict accountability and that it goes directly to the schools and can only be used for very specific purposes.
How about support personnel, like the people that security personnel, food service, transportation workers?
Yeah, those are some of those specific purposes. So any of the non-administrative staff in the school, that the additional revenue can go to increasing the wages of those employees, but also hiring additional staff that have been cut over the years. You know, Arizona, between 2008 and 2014, no state in the country cut more funding from its public school system than Arizona. And our schools have felt the ramifications of that in the form of one of the worst teacher shortage crisis in the country. And we just had new data that came out last week that shows that crisis is getting worse, with more than 1,700 classrooms without a teacher, and we have the largest class sizes. But we also have had the largest student-to-counselor ratio. So this will enable our schools to hire more counselors. Many of our schools don't have school nurses, and particularly when they're going back in the middle of a pandemic, that's important. But also bus drivers, custodial workers, classroom aides, this will give schools the resources to hire back many of those positions and then also increase wages.
Jaime Molera has been all over the media. He's going to be actually on this show next week. Jaime's the former, as you know, David Lujan, former Arizona Superintendent of Public Instruction, kind of a point man, opposed to Proposition 208. He says that he finds wiggle room in the proposition that could put some dollars into the pockets of administrators. How do you answer Mr. Molina?
It's completely false. There is no wiggle room whatsoever that this money would get into administrative costs. It's very specific. And, you know, school districts get audited regularly, and we've heard our opposition talk about, you know, the accountability. And there's a lot of accountability in this provision, but there's also a lot of accountability already in our public school system. The claims that our opposition have been making that Arizona has, spends all this money on administrative costs is simply not consistent with the facts. According to the United States Census Bureau, Arizona spends the third lowest in the country in administrative costs. And in fact, in every aspect of school funding, we're at the bottom. So, and our average superintendent salary is below the national average. So the claims of the opposition, it just don't match the reality.
They also go after the 10% that would be used for mentoring and retaining new teachers in the classroom. And they say, well, who's going to be the mentors for these teachers? Aren't they going to be administrators?
No. One of the reasons we have the teacher shortage crisis that we do is that when they interview people that have been teachers that have left the profession, particularly teachers that have left the profession after just 1 or 2 years, is because the school districts haven't been able to provide that mentoring support for teachers that are new to the profession. Schools used to have that before all of the budget cuts that our legislature made over the years, but because of the cuts, they had to eliminate a lot of those mentoring resources. But those mentors are not administrators, they're not principals. The funding in 208 cannot go to administration. I can't emphasize that enough. But it can go to pay for mentoring programs, which are typically teachers that have been in the profession, that have 10, 15 years experience, that have the training to mentor younger teachers. And so that's going to be a big plus in addressing our teacher shortage crisis and giving those younger teachers the support they often say they need.
You wanted very much to get this on the ballot 2 years ago in 2018. It was thrown off the ballot over a signature dispute. Is this a hybrid program, or is it being modeled after a program in any other states, David Lujan?
It's not a hybrid program modeled after any other state. You're right. We tried to put this on the ballot in 2018. It was a little bit different. You remember we got removed from the ballot in 2018 by the Supreme Court. We looked at the reasons of why they removed us, so we completely restructured it to address the concerns of the Supreme Court. We were able to do that, which is reflective in the fact that this year the Supreme Court unanimously voted to allow us to go on to the ballot. This is very much an Arizona solution for an Arizona problem. The Arizona problem, as I mentioned, is no state in the country has cut more from our public education system than Arizona. We are 48th in the country in per pupil funding, and it's an Arizona solution. And that Arizona solution is that more than 430,000 Arizonans came together to put their signatures on petitions to put this on the ballot so that Arizonans can finally have a voice in putting money into our schools, and because they're just tired of waiting for the politicians to act at the state capitol.
What's your feeling on polling on this? And I know you have done polling. A lot of it hasn't been perhaps not made public. Do you feel very confident about this, David Lujan?
We do feel very confident. There was a poll that was just released last week by Monmouth University that showed that 66% of Arizona voters support Proposition 208. And we've done a lot of polling over the last 3 years. And so that Monmouth University polling has been very consistent with the polls that we've been doing, showing very strong support that Arizonans are ready and want to put more money into our public schools. I think, though, the biggest poll or the biggest indicator is the fact that we were able to get more than 430,000 Arizonans to sign sick petitions in the middle of a pandemic. People were willing to sign. It was not hard to get the signatures because people recognize we have a funding crisis in our schools and they want to get something done about it.
David, where would you direct people to look for more information? Your website, please.
Yeah, it's investined.com, investined.com. And you can go there and you can get more information on the initiative. You can donate to the campaign if you want, or you can sign up to volunteer.
David, good talking with you again, catching up with you. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Bill.
David Lujan is director of the Arizona Center for Economic Progress. David was involved in writing this measure, Prop 208, which is on the November ballot. The Buckmaster Show, presented by Silver City in Grant County, New Mexico. Time to start planning to visit Silver City so you're ready when New Mexico is once again open to out-of-state visitors, and we're really hoping that day is quickly approaching. The COVID numbers have looked very, very good over in the land of enchantment, so hopefully any day we'll get the green light. Only a three-hour drive from Tucson, so much to do and great places to stay. You can find out all about it at southwestnewmexico.org. It's the Buckmaster Show on a Tuesday in the Green Things Zocalo Village Studios. The Buckmaster Show live line presented by Rincon Ventures, Real Estate and Property Management. Up next, Shelley Fishman, who's saying the market gets a qualified thumbs up. Thumbs up for the day. We'll see if that's still the case after we take the first break of the show.
The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun cover two of Arizona's most desirable communities. The newspapers reach more than 75% of the communities each week, with a combined population of more than 50,000. The Green Valley News also publishes a dozen magazines each year, and both newspapers publish up-to-the-minute local news online at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun, it's all right here.
This is Bill Buckmaster. You've heard me talk about choosing Tucson International Airport. While fewer people are traveling lately, our airport is doing even more these days to help ensure traveler health safety, including counter safety shields, physical distancing markers, enhanced cleaning, and more. It's called TUS Cares, and you can learn more at flytucson.com. These may be different times, but my priority remains to fly Tucson, Tucson International Airport.
The Arizona mining industry provides precious metals needed to support technical and structural equipment used by law enforcement, firefighters, and the military to keep us safe here and around the world. But the most critical part of public safety and national security is the people who serve without hesitation to protect us. The Southern Arizona Business Coalition stands with our men and women who serve with respect, responsibility, integrity, and discipline daily to keep us safe.
A Citizens Advisory Committee of the Regional Transportation Authority is in the process of developing a new 20-year regional transportation plan, and soon will consider which projects best address transportation needs across the greater Tucson region. As part of its ongoing public outreach, the RTA invites your early input on which projects meet regional goals. Learn more about plan development and provide input at rtanext.com. Vero Amore Restaurant in Plaza Palomino at Fort Lowland Swan and Dove Mountain in Marana are now open for limited in-restaurant and patio dining, along with takeout and home delivery. All of your favorite Vero Amore menu items, including Tucson's only certified authentic Neapolitan wood-fired pizza, are ready for you and your friends and family. More at veroamorepizza.com.
The Friends of Pima Animal Care Center is the nonprofit partner to our Pima County Animal Shelter. We grant critically needed resources to PACC so that it can continue the amazing life-saving progress it has made in recent years. Your generosity helps us find homes for abused, neglected, and abandoned animals at PAC. Learn how you can help at friendsofpacc.org.
Green Things is a family-owned and operated plant nursery serving Tucson since 1970. Open daily at 3384 East River Road, Green Things is chock full of plants and pottery from around the world. Green Things is also now home to Zocalo, featuring fine Mexican and South American imports spread over five buildings on the 13-acre Green Things property. For more, visit greenthingsaz.com and zocalovillage.com.
Shelley Fishman is a financial consultant in private practice in Tucson, Arizona. The views expressed during this segment are his own and don't necessarily represent those of this station or of Bill Buckmaster Communications. Contact Shelley through buckmastershow.com or at shelleyfishman.com.
And we are back in the Buckmaster, I almost said the Buckmaster Studios. No, it's the Green Things Zocalo Village Studios, our Buckmaster show live line presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. And together, everyone welcomes my friend, Shelley Fishman. How are you, Shell?
I'm well, Bill. How are you doing today?
Doing well. Thank you for asking.
It's Tuesday, but it's not acting like a Tuesday.
No, I'm glad it's not acting like a Tuesday for some weird reason. Normally on Tuesdays at this time, we see the market going south. It's going north, which is good.
Well, it didn't start off that way today.
No,
but
didn't.
But
down almost
200. We've had 4 or 5 days of, you know, fairly steep declines.
Robust declines.
There you go. in the index averages. But that was reversed today. There's no... Look, when you have that kind of decline, you're going to get a correction back. It's going to kind of bounce back. Some of it is people just buying on low prices and you know, trying to do some bottom fishing. But what we had today was a really good report on housing that's hard to, you know, hard to square with what's happening in the rest of the economy. But it turns out in Tucson and in the rest of the country, houses are very scarce right now because people are relocating.
Yep.
And so and prices are going up as well. So I think the market sometime around 9 or 10 o'clock in Pacific time today said, wait a second, that's a pretty good report. Let's maybe rethink where we think this market's going. We're up about 100 points today, not in any way correcting the loss of, you know, several points in the past couple of days. But at least it's a sign that the market isn't giving up.
We're down about 4 or 5 points, though, since all of this decline began.
From last week,
last week.
We're down a little bit on the year in the Dow, and I think down a tiny bit on the S&P since January 1st. But what's important is, you know, there's no way we can take these numbers with any degree of seriousness because the COVID, the pandemic, just makes normal measurements and normal forecasting kind of meaningless.
It really does.
So we have to watch. What we're seeing here is a market that is still, in my opinion, overpriced a bit. If you take a look at the average of where P&E ratios, forward-looking P&E ratios, have been over the past 70 years, that would indicate that the market should be in the area of around, well, the Dow at around 23,000, between 23 and 24,000. It doesn't take a lot of forecasting genius to say it's going to float back there because that's what profits indicated should be. But right now there has been a tremendous amount of upward optimism. You know, some would call it irrational exuberance, but that's kept the market higher than the average P&Es. And so when we see this kind of volatility, I just ignore it if I can.
This whole idea of balancing the needs of stakeholders, we spent pretty much our whole session last Tuesday talking about it. It's really getting legs, isn't it?
Yeah. So the about a year ago, the Business Roundtable, which was, I think the number is 219. I may not be exactly right on
that.
Is
that the one that meets in Switzerland?
They meet Davos? Well, they meet in Davos, okay. But they also
meet other places, beautiful places.
Yeah, and they represent some of the largest corporations in the world.
Mm-hmm.
And they got together and they changed the rules. They said that it's up to CEOs and corporate executives to think about all of their stakeholders in making business decisions. And they put that in writing, and they wrote a letter and published it in wherever. And everybody kind of gasped and said, wait a second. Since 1970, when Milton Friedman wrote that long treatise in the New York Times that said, you only have one job, Mr. Corporation, and that's to make profits for your owners. That's the way we've been behaving since then.
This takes a 360.
Now, what Dr. Friedman said, in addition to, yeah, you only have one job, he says, but you've also got another job, and that's to obey the law. And so if the rules say that you have to do other things that are more socially conscious. You got to do those. Mm-hmm. But it's not up to you to make that decision. It's up to government to make that decision. And then it's up to us as business leaders to obey the rules. So last, I want to say it was Saturday in the New York Times, I can't remember who the author was, wrote a long piece saying Milton Friedman was right, that it's up to the corporate leaders to make profits for their owners and obey the law. Therefore, the only thing we can do is change the laws. And so he was suggesting that we need to move our legal structure closer to the kind of social contract that you see in Northern Europe or in Europe in general, which talks about, it talks about commitments to the other stakeholders that corporations have. And then today in the New York Times, the Business Roundtable was given a report card on a survey and some research that was done. And the author there is Peter Goodman, where he says, look, the stakeholder capitalism idea just gets a report card, and it ain't good. It says what the business leaders have done is basically kind of ignored what the Business Roundtable has said they should be doing over the past year. And they've been laying off people, and they've been paying dividends and doing all the things that they've been doing for the past 50 years, despite what the Roundtable said. A close reading of that article, however, reveals, I think, some real movement. And they talk about, Mark Benioff of Salesforce, and everybody talks about Amazon always. But if you take a look at what CEOs, first of all, if you take a look at what CEOs have been trained to do for the past 50 years or so, they've been trained to make money. They've taken the easy way, because if that's their only job is to make money and obey the law, then a lot of their decision-making is made much easier.
Like cutting costs.
You do what you need to do. You have your experts. Mm-hmm. They forecast where the business is going to go. And then you structure your business on a going forward basis to mitigate any bad forecasts and to take advantage of any good ones. That's their job. They haven't been trained to balance the needs of all of their stakeholders out of their own volition and out of their own need as business leaders to do that. Now, these are smart guys. I mean, they're going to figure it out, but they're not going to figure it out abruptly and on a it's not going to be a 180 degree turn.
Are they using the pandemic as an excuse?
Well, it's not an excuse, Bill.
Okay.
I mean, there has been
a drastic reduction in customer demand. Yeah, so maybe it isn't an excuse.
Well, it's not an excuse. It's a reality.
Reality.
Now, and remember, what we talk about here is balancing the need. Nobody said that stakeholders like stockholders and owners don't count anymore. Nobody said that. It says what you've got to do is you look at your customers, you look at your owners, you look at your suppliers, your employees, you look at the communities that you live in, and those stakeholders have varying interests. Some of them are long-term, some of them are short-term. But you can't meet all of their needs simultaneously. It just ain't possible. What you have to do is strike a balance that seems to be right for you, for them, and for your corporation in terms of the way it operates and where it operates and where the dependencies are. This is all made much more complex by the fact that corporations now, almost half of their business comes from overseas. So that to expect that just because 219 or so CEOs said, yeah, we sign on to this change, that it was going to happen snap dab overnight, is not a really great expectation. That said, if the business community in this country ignores the needs of stakeholders, what you will begin to see is the laws changing to force them to take into account the rest of their stakeholders. And that is called socialism, or movements in the direction of what social democracy has been in Europe for, the past 60 or 70 years. That scares a lot of people.
Mm-hmm.
And so if we are to avoid putting that down in concrete, you know, in cement, these mm-hmm. are the things you must do, then business leaders in this country are going to have to find ways of getting there and publicizing the fact that they're getting there so that we see some good press, we see the good things that they're doing. Otherwise, they're going to be forced to do it, not overnight, but it will happen.
All right, Shelley, and you're going to have a good discussion coming up October 20th, aren't
you?
You've got former Mayor Jonathan Rothschild. You're going to sit down one-on-one with him here on the program.
For the full hour.
Good.
And one of the things we're going to talk about is how he, over 8 years, was able to work with the corporations that work in this community and get the community as a stakeholder, the community's interests built into their business plans. No easy feat, but he did it.
Coming up October the 20th, right here on The Buckmaster Show. Shelley, thanks very much. Have a great week.
You too, Bill. See you next week.
All right. The Buckmaster Show in the Green Things Zocalo Village Studio, our live line presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. Up next, time for our 2020 Your Vote, Your Voice candidate interview series. We'll be talking with one of the six candidates running for the Tucson Unified School District Governing Board. There are three open seats and six candidates. You'll meet one of them next.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. Have your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local, independent, nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and Pima politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
Noble Hops in Oro Valley is now open to welcome guests for limited in-restaurant and patio dining, along with takeout and home delivery. All of your favorite Noble Hops menu items are available for you, your family, and friends. So check out Noble Hops, a pub for foodies, on West Lambert Lane at North La Cunada Drive in Oro Valley, and on the web at noblehopspub.com.
The Arizona mining industry provides precious metals needed to support technical and structural equipment used by law enforcement, firefighters, and the military to keep us safe here and around the world. But the most critical part of public safety and national security is the people who serve without hesitation to protect us. The Southern Arizona Business Coalition stands with our men and women who serve with respect, responsibility, integrity, and discipline daily to keep us safe.
Vets working hard to save wildlife covered in cactus spines. A skunk left for dead, miraculously saved by a caring citizen. Those are just a couple of the headlines from the nonprofit Tucson Animal Rescue Center, where thousands of animals are cared for each year at its state-of-the-art Far East Side Tucson facility. Rescue, rehab, and release. The Tucson Wildlife Center, saving wildlife for more than two decades. Donate online at TucsonWildlife.com or call 290-WILD.
Here at Bon Voyage Travel, we encourage you to keep the travel spark alive by exploring the world through our weekly webinar series that includes inspiration and insight from some of the top leaders in the travel industry. When you're ready to plan your next adventure, know that Bon Voyage Travel will be here to advise and assist. Join us every Wednesday at 3 p.m. for a new virtual destination discovery. While we're apart, let's keep dreaming together. Visit bvtravel.com for more information.
Cushman & Wakefield PICOR is Tucson's leading independently owned full-service commercial real estate company. Founded in 1985, Cushman & Wakefield PICOR offers leasing, sales, and property management for industrial, office, medical, retail, land, and investment properties in Tucson and Sonora, Mexico. Visit our website at PICOR.com for the latest news from Tucson's commercial real estate sector. That's PICOR.com. Call us at 748-7100. Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing is once again welcoming guests to the gallery. Stop by or call ahead for a one-on-one appointment or even a virtual design session. Come by Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing, located at the southwest corner of Fort Lowell and Dodge. The number is 795-8226 and on the web at moesgallery.com. Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show in the Green Things Zocalo Village Studios. Green Things, your go-to place for all of your autumn plants that you will be, I'm sure, looking to plant to give a little color to the backyard garden. It's been a long summer, hasn't it? Hopefully, after we get through this excessive heat warning that looks like it's coming next week, there'll be a dramatic change in the weather. I've been saying that and hoping that for weeks now, but maybe, who knows, maybe it will actually happen. Green Things, located at 3384 East River Road by the Rito River, 13-acre site with everything imaginable for the garden, everything imaginable green, and everything imaginable in the way of beautiful merchandise from Mexico, Latin America, and Europe at Zocalo Village. GreenThingsAZ.com and ZocaloVillage.com are the two websites. The Buckmaster Show Live Line, presented by Rincon Ventures, Real Estate and Property Management. Time for our 2020 Your Vote, Your Voice candidate interview series. Adam Reagan is with us on the live line. Adam is one of six candidates hoping to fill three vacancies on the five-member TUSD governing board. Adam, how are you?
I'm doing wonderful today. How are you doing?
Doing well. Thank you for asking. I can't ever, in my 30-plus years here, I don't think I can ever recall three vacancies on the TUSD board coming up. There's going to be a big change, isn't there, on this board?
It's a huge change. I looked in the history, and to my knowledge and research, this is the only time that has ever happened, at least going back to the 1950s, that we have three open seats on the board. So I'm looking forward to the changes and potential that can bring.
Tell our listeners about yourself, Adam, and why you think you are the best or one of the best, certainly, to fill those three seats.
Yeah, so I think to my knowledge, I am the only certified current classroom teacher. So that means I'm actually in a public high school. I'm teaching through the pandemic. I'm teaching virtually now. I'm getting ready to ramp into hybrid for my classes. And I think that perspective really brings a voice to the conversation that can help center students and educators in the conversation. So I think that unique set of qualifications, and then my history of being able to be an independent voice while also working collaboratively with my colleagues to make things happen, try to draw people in. So I think I have the right temperament, and I also have the drive and passion. This is something I am dedicated to. Been on your show before to talk about issues of education or TUSD. So I'm very excited to be doing the thing that I love the most. I think I'm the most blessed man in Tucson.
Yeah, you have been following for a long time issues at TUSD, haven't you?
I have. I made a promise to myself when I graduated grad school, when I got across the stage, that wasn't it for me, that I would turn around and offer hands across to everybody that comes after me. So for me, that looked a lot like teaching the college writing classes at community colleges. And then the thing that I thought I would never do, which is become a high school teacher, I became. And all of a sudden, I found my heart and my soul and the thing that drives me the most to get up every day. So I keep my eye and ear on education issues, especially here in Tucson.
Adam, let's talk about the issues that we'll be facing this newly reconstituted board. in the new year. Certainly the COVID and how that's certainly impacted finances, parents leaving the district to perhaps go to a charter school where they can bring their child to kind of one-on-one teaching. There are so many issues that are facing this board. What is your platform?
So my platform, I mean, the pandemic, you mentioned, it hits on everything. It is the central issue and is the first thing the newly constituted board is going to have to deal with, whether that is the mid-year budget reallocations that are going to follow our 40-day census numbers that are about to hit, or it is how we respond to the hybrid plan. I know the board is voting tonight on the first phase of what the hybrid plan is going to look like. I'm hoping there's going to be some good discussion from board members and asking Dr. Trujillo and staff some of those serious questions that need to be answered before we get our kids back in the classroom in just 3 short weeks. One thing that I want to touch on, you mentioned, you said charters. Like, I hope that parents will look at our district by the time this board has gotten together and started working in the future as the premier district and place to enroll your kids, that this is the education and the place that you want to be for your kids. Charters can lure you and be very attractive, but they don't always offer all the promises that they don't deliver all the promises that they offer. So I'm hoping that this board can really look at the opportunities to grow this district into the middle of the 21st century. I know it's kind of scary to say that, but a kid born in 2038, or a kid born today, is going to graduate in 2038.
Wow. That's sobering, my friend.
It is very sobering. I don't say that to make any listeners feel like we're getting old, but it puts a very fine polish on what we're here to do as a governing board. We have work that needs to be done today that will have far-reaching implications into the 21st century, and I want to make sure that we are delivering on that promise for the kid that's just being born at St. Mary's right now.
How much concern is there, Adam, in the class, or from with your fellow teachers about going back to the classroom?
I think between my students and my colleagues, we want to be back, but we also want to know that our health and safety is protected, at least as reasonably can be protected in the uncertainty of a global pandemic. There are things that we can do to help protect students' health and safety. I think for teachers, the big concern right now is making sure that there are accommodations for those that want to be and need to be at home for their own health. And I'm hoping that tonight that will be addressed by the superintendent when he presents this plan to the governing board.
You teach what subject? I don't think you mentioned that at the beginning when you said you are a classroom teacher.
I don't want to scare anyone away. I am an English teacher, but I promise I'm not here to assign you an essay.
How about your own educational background? Where did you go to school?
So I went to ASU. I'm a public university student for undergrad and graduate school. I lived in Phoenix at the time and got a bachelor's in English and a English linguistics and a master's in English, focusing on structured English immersion and the 4-hour block classroom.
The curriculum, is that issue pretty much behind us? Will the new board have to deal with curriculum?
Curriculum is always an issue that drives education in our discussion. So especially in a hybrid model, how we find highly engaging and rigorous curricula that also reflect our students' lived experiences is going to be a crucial thing that I hope I can bring that discussion to the board. Having to teach curricula to our students, and I've also designed it and then reviewed it and revised it for TUSD, but also for, you know, my professional day job. So curriculum is always a central issue for me.
How are you getting the word out about the campaign? Do you have the website you'd like to share?
I do. It's adam4tusd, that's the numeral 4.com. So adam4tusd.com. And that's got all my policy positions, the things that I want to work on in my first, I think 100 days is probably that false binary from the presidency. So to me, what I want to work on first and those urgent issues and then things that are important to me that we can't, I keep saying we can't lose sight of the important just because the urgent needs our attention right now. So I have all that information on my website.
All right, Adam Reagan, thank you very much.
I appreciate the time. Thank you very much.
Thanks a lot. Adam Reagan, one of the 6 candidates running for TUSD, the 3 openings on their 5-member board. All of our interviews, including my interview with David Lujan of Prop 208, will be posted at kvoi.com. That's kind of become our clearinghouse for all three of our local talk shows, Wake Up, and then we have Wake Up Tucson, of course, then we have Zach's show at 9, but we're all doing candidate interviews, then we pool everything together, and it's kvoi.com for the clearinghouse for our website. While we're talking education, I do want to mention this Sunnyside Gives Day, which is today. And KVOI, along with our sister station 106.3 The Groove, is partnering with the Sunnyside Foundation to help raise $50,000 that will go directly to the foundation's Emergency Relief Fund and their Excellence in Education Fund. The Sunnyside Foundation provides resources to enhance and accelerate the educational experience for every Sunnyside student. They invest those monies into areas that go, really, they're critical and right back into the classroom. So the effort here is to raise $50,000, and the superintendent, Steve Holmes, has said that he will dye his hair blonde if they reach that $50,000 goal, and let's hope they do. Go to kvoi.com, click on the banner to give what you can. We return in the Buckmaster Show Green Things Zocalo Village Studios, the Buckmaster Show Live Line, presented by Rincon Ventures, Real Estate and Property Management.
The average person in the USA today takes over 12 prescription medicines each year. And if you are over age 65, it is more than 17 medicines. CredibleMeds.org is a nonprofit organization dedicated to helping inform you and your healthcare providers. Over 30,000 people die each year from reactions to their medicines. Don't be one of those numbers. Be informed and stay safe. Visit CredibleMeds.org today and take control of your health care by taking your medicines safely.
As a small business owner, I appreciate the services of a top-notch certified public accountant. That's why Michael C. Flowers of Flowers, Rieger & Associates is the CPA firm of the Buckmaster Show. Michael's a former Small Business Leader of the Year in Tucson. He'll professionally handle all of your accounting needs and tax preparation services. Flowers, Rieger & Associates, 6125 East Grant Road, and on the web, flowersrieger.com. Family-owned Jam Culinary Concepts and its family of restaurants has you covered for your special event. Jam caters anytime, anywhere, any size group, and any type of cuisine. Vero Amore, authentic Neapolitan pizza, and Noble Hops, craft beer and fine fare are synonymous with quality. Call 954-1468 or log on to jamculinaryconcepts.com.
The Regional Transportation Authority plan is funded by a voter-approved half-cent sales tax, which expires in June 2026. In preparation for developing a new 20-year regional transportation plan, the RTA board established a Citizens Advisory Committee to select projects for the draft plan. The committee will help identify which projects to invest in to best meet regional transportation needs. Learn more about plan development and provide early input at rtanext.com.
Hello, I'm Danette Bewley, President and CEO of the Tucson Airport Authority, with news of our new effort to ensure air traveler safety and security going through our terminal. It's called TUS Cares, and you can read more about it on our website, flytucson.com. As you carefully weigh your decision to fly, I want you to know whether it's next week, next month, or next year, we are here for you at Tucson International Airport. Thank you.
Hi, this is Pam Krim, CEO of the Better Business Bureau of Southern Arizona, where we set the standards for marketplace trust by engaging with and educating consumers and businesses. The BBB is the place to turn for objective and unbiased information on businesses. Learn more about the many services offered by the Better Business Bureau of Southern Arizona at bbb.org/Tucson.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show on this Tuesday afternoon in the Green Things Zocalo Village Studios, the Buckmaster Show Live Line, presented by Rincon Ventures, Real Estate and Property Management. Dr. Mark Sykes is with us on the live line, Dr. Mark Sykes, CEO and director of the Tucson-based Planetary Science Institute, which for almost 50 years now has been engaged in the exploration of the solar system. Mark, how are you?
Oh, very good. Very good, Bill.
Hey, I love this headline in the New York Times, their science section, which I always enjoy looking at on Tuesday. Here's the forecast for Venus. Cloudy with a chance of microbes.
Who would have thought?
Yeah.
Who would have thought?
Recent discoveries challenging the notion that a very hot planet like Venus is a lifeless world. There may be life out there.
You know, life will find a way, right?
Yeah.
They said that in Jurassic Park.
Mm-hmm. Yes, sir.
Yeah, this is a fascinating discovery, the detection of a molecule, phosphine, in the Venusian atmosphere, which is primarily associated with anaerobic life. And, you know, it's found in places on Earth with, you know, very low oxygen levels. And so a couple of groups of scientists, one was reporting the detection of this, and they don't have any other, well, they have, life is the only explanation they could really come up with, but they're saying, anybody else got any other ideas? and then another paper out of I think it was MIT, Sarah Seeger, was saying that, well, how would this work? You know, that if you have the Venus atmosphere has these droplets in it, but unlike the Earth, it has this significant kind of convection going on. And so these droplets would come down and over some long period of time, get the sense of the density of Venus's atmosphere. The Russian probe that landed on the surface didn't need any parachutes. It just kind of like sank through the atmosphere, slowed down. But anyway, so these droplets come down, you know, over some period of time, and ultimately get to a layer that's warm, and they evaporate, and then any microbes in them become desiccated, and then get wafted back up into the atmosphere, joins another droplet, and continues its you know, life. That's the hypothesis. And so, further observations to confirm the detection of phosphine, and then further modeling to understand what could be going on here. Is this really the only option we have on the table for explaining it? And then how would that work? And the thing that came to my mind right away was that phosphine is detected elsewhere in the solar system, in the atmospheres of Jupiter and Saturn. But it's thought on those planets to have formed deep under higher temperature pressures, and then because of the remarkable circulation aspects of those atmospheres, gets tossed up into higher elevations, break down the phosphorus, is broken off and colors the clouds of Jupiter. You know, it gives it that red, some of those red bands. But you know, it would beg the question: gee whiz, could we have this kind of life on Venus out at Jupiter and Saturn as well?
So we had two telescopes. We had the telescope in Hawaii on the Big Island, I think it was, and one in Chile that spotted this chemical signature. And my question for you is, Venus is pretty close for astronomers to be looking at that planet. Why now are they just discovering this, Mark?
Well, because we have new capabilities, you know, that's afforded by these facilities. The ALMA Observatory in the Atacama Desert in Chile is very sensitive in microwave regions that at lower altitudes just get wiped out by the Earth's atmosphere, and so you know, new windows, new opportunities to make new measurements, and they found something. So, you know, we're all, and also you come in with, New questions, and so we're always we're always in the business of getting new data and going, oh my, what does this mean?
Now, a private company may send a probe to Venus in 2023. That was also in the Science edition of the New York Times today. Of course, Mr. Musk wants to settle humans on Mars with his rocket company SpaceX. So now we're talking about maybe a private mission to Venus.
Well, yeah, you know, there's always talk, you know.
talk is cheap.
Talk is cheap, yeah. And, you know, it's hundreds of millions of dollars and over something that at this point in time is, like I said, hypothetical. However, we do have, a couple of missions that are not designed to settle this question, but are going to, if they're up for selection in the Discovery program. There's five missions that are finishing or that have finished phase A, and NASA will select hopefully two of them to go, and two of them have been are Venus missions. And Venus has been kind of the Rodney Dangerfield of the solar system.
No respect.
For some time. No respect. You know, yep. I mean, the U.S. hasn't sent any probes there for a long time. And but both of these Discovery missions plan to explore the atmosphere of Venus and down to these levels. And one's an airplane, you know, a glider type of thing, and the other's a probe. But one could see, you know, maybe in another mission or another call, sending a balloon or a glider equipped to see if it can detect any bugs in the atmosphere. Venus is accessible in that regards, but it's not cheap.
Let me ask you under the category, there are no dumb questions. Between Mars and Venus, what at one time in history might have been more like Earth?
Both of them.
There you go.
How about that? You know, okay. I mean, on Mars, you were fairly certain that it had a large ocean covering its north pole. And that, you know, there may have been a period of time when the conditions were good for the development of life. Likewise, a few billion years ago or a couple billion years ago, it's thought that there was an ocean covering the surface of Venus.
Mm.
And that a series of, you know, eruptions or whatever took place and covered most of the surface in lava. And fairly catastrophic. But Venus could have been a very Earth-like planet with oceans and everything in the distant past as well. So if life had evolved on Venus, you know, and then catastrophe happened, well, you know, it's quite possible that quite a bunch of, you know, bugs could have been kicked up into the atmosphere, and because of the different conditions of the atmosphere on Venus in terms of its thickness and such, and turbulence that or convections, that they've learned to just continue living up there.
Let me squeeze in one more question about Venus. Venus is totally encased in clouds. Is that correct?
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And we're talking very thick clouds.
Yes, you don't see down to the surface from the outside at the wavelengths we normally look at things. And, you know, the pressure down at the surface is something like 90 times the pressure of the surface of the Earth.
Oh.
You know, so it's very, very dense. And, of course, down on the surface, very hot. And so it's just a, it's and as a consequence, you know, we don't have that much information about Venus, you know, that we can see remotely from Mars. And so all these things, it's a nice surprise that there could be just unexpected, fascinating things going on there.
Always unexpected things happening in your business, Dr. Mark Sykes.
Very true.
Thank you so much. We'll look forward to your visit with us in October. More information at psi.edu. Thanks a lot. Stay safe, Mark.
Thank you, Bill. You too.
All right. Mark Sykes, CEO and director of the Planetary Science Institute. Great organization here in Tucson. I'm a member. Check it out, psi.edu. That's it for the Buckmaster Show. Quickly running out of time. Thanks to John Couch, engineering and producing. Dave Ramsey's next with his popular show on money. On behalf of everybody here at Bustos Media, have a great afternoon.